Bills running away now.
You're listening to the best of the Bills.
Touchdown, the first play from scrimmage.
A weekly mix of WGR 550's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Topic of discussion for you today, where is your confidence in the Bills' defense after last week's performance against the Jets? 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the numbers to get on board. Got some open lines for you, but we're going to lead off today with Don in Rochester. What do you got for us, Don?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Interesting observation I saw pregame was Brandon Bean talking to Devontae Adams. Wonder what Adams' status. I'm assuming he was on a one-year deal with the Jets. And possibly, Brandon may be asking him if he wants to come play with a winning team. I don't know if you guys caught that or anybody else saw that.
Did not see that. I don't know. I mean, you got to look, I think, to even consider him, you got to look at his contract. He was traded. He was not signed by the Jets. He was traded to the Jets from the Raiders. So, I mean, I can...
Well, I'll say this. It's an NFL GM's job to know things like that. And I don't know that it's even legal for him to talk like that to Devontae Adams other than just saying hello and all that. I have no idea what the rules are pertaining to that. But... If it's legal, then yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the Jets can get out of the contract for only an $8.3 million dead cap hit. So that's palatable for them, especially knowing in 2025 and 2026, he's supposed to have a base salary of $35 million. So I would imagine they pull the ripcord there and take the $8.3 million cap hit. Jets are going to be in cap jail for a while with all the contracts they inherited, like this one, along with the ones that they added void years to push money into the future, they're going to pay. Could he be out there on the market? Yes. Do you want a guy that's going to turn 33 next year in your receiving core? I mean, I guess Devontae Adams he's still a viable player in the league. I'm not going to debate that. But age 33 season... I'm not sure.
No.
Not sure. I mean, he's a good player. An offense that's the highest scoring offense in team history. I don't know that you need him.
Yeah. He's a good player, no question. He's probably going to find a place to land, but he's going to command a big salary because of who he is and what he has done in the NFL, and he's probably won as long of a term as he can get. The Bills would sign him to, I don't know, one of those, maybe a two-year deal, I would think. You're not going to sign the guy to a three-year deal. He'd be 36 at the end of it. There's no way. So I don't think Devontae Adams is a viable option for Buffalo, particularly given his current status as being a Jet and the numbers that would come with him and the fact that they have done more with less this year and all these guys they've got on the roster now playing for on rookie deals, some of them. So,
yeah.
I like this crew. I don't know if I like this crew any better with Devontae in it. Who are you gonna kick to the curb? Mac Hollins?
I don't know.
Yeah, no. Maybe. He's probably kicking the tires, but they're not gonna sign him to the kind of deal other teams would sign him to. And at this point of his career, Devontae is dumb not to take the money.
Right. You're assuming the Jets hold on to him. I don't know that they will.
Or the Jets cut him and somebody else signs him.
Right.
Like somebody like the Arizona Cardinals go in, you know, with Marvin Harrison Jr. On a rookie contract and come in, get 2 years out of Devontae with Kyler, and he gives you that extra weapon and extra credibility on, you know, all that stuff. A team like that.
Yeah. The Bills aren't going to pay that.
And the Cardinals are in that kind of.
Yeah. I think that's a good assessment. Let's go to Tom on the west side next. What do you got for us, Tom?
Happy New Year's Eve, guys.
To you as well.
Well, Listen, it's the same thing I've complained about all season. It's the run defense. Now, we're probably going to, if we get past the wild card round, which I assume, so I'm looking ahead, and we got to face Derrick Henry. So I'm wondering if we threw Andreessen in there, if he could make a difference, because the kid's a tackling machine. Now, I don't know how good he'd do against Derrick Henry either, because he's a big boy. I mean, I'll never forget when he launched that our defensive back.
Yeah, Josh Norman.
Yeah, Norman. Yeah, he launched him into the air. So, I think Andreessen could make a difference.
And yeah, I think
about Williams, but.
Right. Yeah, I get what you're saying, Tom. Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned run defense. We realize that that's been the prevailing concern year over year for Buffalo's defense based on how things have gone in the playoffs. People still remember Joe Mixon running wild against them in the divisional playoff in 2023. And, you know, they remember last year, you know, Isaiah Pacheco getting rushing yards. And I get all of that. I'm going to say this. I think the Bills have actually improved their run defense as the season has worn on. And right now, they're a middle-of-the-pack run defense. They're 13th in the league in run defense. The issue comes in the yards per carry average, where they rank 25th. As a matter of fact, right now, they're giving up 4.7 yards per carry. That's a fat number. And it's a big reason why they have trouble getting off the field on third down, because it's usually manageable down and distance when an opponent gets to third down because of the rushing success they've had against the Bills on first and second down. I'm not saying every team goes run, run, pass. I'm just saying, to generalize here, that's been a sticking point. But I think they have done some things to try to shore up the run defense. And I'll get to some other numbers. I even mentioned one of them to Steve that I'm concerned about. But we'll get to that, knowing we got people waiting on hold here a little bit later on in the show. Let's go to Keith in Collins next. What do you got for us, Keith?
Brownie, you probably, Steve, you might know too as well. I'm not sure how the MVP process works to these reporters or sports reporters, 50 sports reporters, just put a name on a piece of paper and mail it in, or do they sit around a table and talk about it? How exactly does that
work?
It's individual. They put it in. Yeah. It's independently of each other.
They do mail it in, and there are 50, so you're right about that. And the votes are sent in after the regular season ends and before the playoffs begin. And then it's not announced until the weekend of the Super Bowl. So all the votes will be in before the playoffs begin. And that's designed, obviously, to make sure voters are voting on what has been done in the regular season. It's a regular season award. And then they announce who won the weekend of the Super Bowl. Now, they do also, if I remember right, they do have first, second, and third place votes.
Yeah.
Because those all count towards the total.
They put a...
Like, I vote Josh Allen first, Lamar Jackson second, Saquon Barkley third.
Right.
And the players get a certain number of points for those votes.
Whatever that is, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's, yes, that's how it works.
So hopefully that helps you.
You'll probably, it'll be leaked.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah.
All right.
It's the world we live in.
Let's go to Ruth in Orchard Park next. What's up, Ruth?
I just had a quick MVP stat question. When the powers to be discuss this, do they consider how much time Josh Allen has sat out of the game due to the score being lopsided? And if he were to stay in those games, how much bigger his stats, how much higher his stats would be, and why don't they discuss that on air?
Yeah, it's a good point, Ruth. It's a valid point because, as we know, the Bills have been up in about a handful to half a dozen games where Josh is on the sidelines come the fourth quarter wearing a baseball hat, and has probably got fewer snaps on the field than Lamar Jackson because of it. For example, Lamar's going to play this week for the Ravens. They want to win the division. So he'll be playing. Josh is going to get a series of snaps.
He has to play this week because they lost a bunch of games this year.
Yeah. So he'll be playing and getting more snaps again this week. And it'll probably, I think I heard somebody say, it's going to be about 100 snap difference between the two of those just going into this weekend's game.
Right.
Might be
there,
more after
there might
this week.
Be, yeah, there might. I mean, there hadn't been that many games. Maybe the win in Miami.
Jacksonville game.
Jacksonville game.
Tennessee game.
The Tennessee game. And then there was the Niners game, which I don't think he came out of.
And last week's game. Sunday's game.
This last game. So there's like four that he probably came out early. Not just he didn't miss a ton of time. Although the Jets game he did, I don't know. Yes, they do. All those guys see that. They're professional writers. They cover the sport. They talk about such things. They don't talk about it on the air because sometimes I'll say why they don't talk about it because sometimes it helps their argument and sometimes it does not. Sometimes it doesn't when you're talking about Josh.
To Ruth's point, though, Steve, I don't know if the guy that covers the Seattle Seahawks is 100% aware that Josh Allen has sat out the fourth quarter of four or five games.
Oh, they know
and
that.
His stats are lesser because of that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I don't even know if they care. I don't even know if everybody cares about that.
Yes, every guy weighs the criteria in his own way. So, but yes, if anybody's doing – if the 50 writers who cover the NFL are doing their jobs, which they are because they've been doing it for a while – they have had multiple conversations in multiple years about all of the stuff that we talk about here in the years where we got a guy who's in the conversation.
Yeah, in terms of what the criteria should
be. Yeah, in terms of the criteria and what you have to consider. So they know all this stuff. So, yes, they may not do it on the air. But like I said, and there's always guys who don't have votes. Like Brownie and I, we don't have votes. But they talk about that stuff. And if it bolsters the conversation for the guy they're rooting for, they'll use it. If it doesn't, they won't. It's that simple. That's the way the world turns.
Yeah.
So that's why you won't hear about those conversations about guys sitting down or whatever, because the guy's sitting down because he's crushing people. That doesn't help them if they don't like the guy.
Yeah.
There's some teams that are harder to sneak the ball on if they've got some bigger guys and they have a good plan for that. Sometimes it is just man-on-man and low man wins and, again, just trying to find the right crease and trying to get 1 yard. And sometimes, you know, we've been pretty successful at it this year, probably a couple times where I didn't do a good enough job. But it's definitely a powerful tool for us that maybe not a lot of teams can use it because of the size that we have up front. I'm at the quarterback and the guy usually behind me pushing, so...
There is Buffalo Bills quarterback Josh Allen talking a little bit about the QB sneak action that the Bills have. Them and the Eagles kind of now become famous for. They're on the 1 yard line, baby.
The tush push and the snowplow. Let's go.
You know what's happening, and they score a lot of the time, if not like 95% of the time. For more on the Bills, as funny enough, the last 2 days have been very big news day for the Bills. We go to the Western Hotline as Sal Capaccio joins the show. Sal, how are we doing on this morning?
Pretty good, guys. Good to be with you.
Going to be with you as well. Only two Pro Bowlers for the Bills, Sal. I'm somebody, I only really get upset for the players because I know it can play into their contract. This does seem to be the Bills' MO, though, like in this era. I think out of like one of these years, they got like eight, but for the most part, it's like around five or so guys that get these first nods.
Yeah, you know, I think every fan base, you know, looks at their team and props up their own guys and says, oh my God, I can't believe this guy didn't make it or that guy didn't make it. There's really good players around the league, right? But I think to your point, which is exactly right, Zach, which is the Bills have kind of, you know, been a team-first team, right? I mean, that's do your 111. It's not about the stars. They have some stars, and they have had some over the years. But I think even defensively, specifically, yeah, I know Taron Johnson is a Pro Bowler, and Micah Hyde made it once, and Jordan Poyer made it once. But you really every year it was more about the collective sum of the parts more than anything. And I think this year really underscores that, especially on the offensive side, but on both sides of the ball. I mean, you can't have the everybody eats mantra and then expect somebody to have these unbelievable numbers that get them there, right? But at the same time, James Cook, close to 1,000 yards. I think he has a case, no doubt about it. And there's definitely, you know, other guys that you could say, okay, well, maybe he should have been there, and he wasn't chosen. I think the biggest snub is Christian Benford for the Bills. He wasn't even an alternate, which is ridiculous to me. Christian Benford, I think what happens with DBs is, I think you guys would agree that you get your name recognition through stats, right? You get your name recognition through interceptions around the league and things like that. He's got two, but he's just so good. Like, teams don't really throw at him much, and when they do, and he has really great, you know, numbers as far as, you know, holding receivers down or, you know, catches against them, percentages and things like that. So I think that's the one guy I look at and say, you know, I really – think he should have been on that list somewhere. But, you know, it's a Pro Bowl, and, you know, it's obviously their bigger goals for this team.
Yeah, Sal, the one thing we were really looking at was James Cook, comparing him to some of the other running backs in there. And obviously, like, Derrick Henry, you're not going to overtake Derrick Henry, and even Jonathan Taylor, too. But Joe Mixon's a guy that has the same stats as James Cook, if not worse, in most categories. And it's just kind of surprising that he's in there and Cook's not. And it obviously, Cook is the first alternate, so, you know, he's right there. But it's just still, like, kind of frustrating for how good of a season he had.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I would say Mixon really started off great, and then he had the injury, and he missed some games. But those first few games kind of probably put him there, right? Like, you remember the first month of the season, like, holy cow, Joe Mixon, he's awesome. And that probably really put his name out in the forefront for this conversation. And people just, you know, you just kind of think about, oh, yeah, Joe Mixon. He had his name out there. He was doing all these great things. James Cook's kind of got better as the season's gone on. He's been consistent, but I think he's been doing some of his best work later in the season here. And that's probably hurt him a little bit in the eyes of, you know, some of the voters and fans or whatever, you know, however that goes down. So you're right. I think statistically, you know, one for one, you know, you're right that James Cook probably deserved it over him. You know, Mixon has had a good year, but like I said, I think you go back, it really was mostly in the beginning part of the year when he was doing most of his work.
Looking to this weekend, Sal, the Bills did have, they had practice yesterday, right? I mean, it was a walkthrough, but they did hold practice.
They had a walkthrough, yeah.
All right, cool. Terrell Bernard, we know, is not playing. It's a quad injury. It sounded more, it's a mix between day-to-day, week-to-week, more leaning towards day-to-day?
Yeah, so that's what Sean McDermott said. The words he used were somewhere between day-to-day and week-to-week, more like day-to-day. So let me just give you my interpretation of that. I've covered the Bills, and Sean McDermott covered him specifically in press conferences for 8 years now. And when he talks and says these kinds of things, there's kind of ways that you can read into it. So the best way I can read into it, from knowing what he generally means by these things, and this is just my interpretation, that week to week means you're going to evaluate it next week. He just told you he's not playing this week. So what does that mean? You go to next week. That's week to week. So it's a week to week evaluation of the injury, but the severity of it would be more on the day-to-day side, if that makes sense, right? Which is, okay, it's probably a day-to-day, you know, see how he is, but we're not going to really evaluate him until next week. He's not playing this week. That makes it week to week. So now you're somewhere between day-to-day and week to week. I hope that makes sense. I think the bottom line is, guys, I think the bottom line is, I think Bills fans shouldn't really be worried until we're here next week and Terrell Bernard's not practicing, but I don't think that would be the case at this point based on the way McDermott sounded. I don't think there's any cause for concern that he wouldn't be available for the first-round playoff game.
And then on the Patriots side of things, we got news this morning. Drake May is going to play, which it seemed in the early parts of the week that maybe he was leaning towards not, but as the week has gone on, it looked more and more likely that May was going to play.
Yeah, you know, what is the injury? Is he it was concussion or what was the injury? He was dealing with something. I think he's dealing with something, which is part of the reason why. It wasn't just because they were going to rest him and sit him. You know, he should play. I think if he's available, he should play. And, you know, I get it. Like, there's a lot of these things floating around. You guys had someone talk about it earlier. You guys have talked about it, which is, you know, should the Bills want to lose the game? But it's just that you're not going to do that. Like, no, the Bills shouldn't want to lose the game. Like, listen, I'm going to say this again to everybody, all right? You have can you imagine if, what is Sean McDermott supposed to do? Is he supposed to go up to his players who are playing who have worked all year? Joe Andreessen gets a chance to start in this game, right? Let's use that as an example. So you're going to go to Joe Andreessen and say, hey, we really want to lose this game. Don't make the tackle. You can't do that. Like, come on. What are we talking about here, right? Like, it would be so disrespectful to do something like that to the players who've worked their tails off to have a chance to win a game. That's true, because he's going out there to put good stuff on film. You know, the guy has a career to think about. He's going to try and, you know, be a backup quarterback or a starter or something next year, right? So all this nonsense about the Bills should make decisions to try and lose the game, it's just, to me, it's just dumb, to be quite honest with you. That's not what you do. It's professional sports. These people work their tails off all year, every week, to get out there and to try and play a game. And the coaching staff and everybody else owes it to them to try and do their best to win the game. You don't worry about the Patriots getting the number one pick. I don't worry about it. They have their quarterback. Sure. Could they be better and more enhanced by having a number one pick? Yes. It doesn't matter. You still have to make those picks. You still have to develop them. A few years ago, guys, the Miami Dolphins got a whole bunch of picks when they traded with the Niners for the Trey Lance pick. Well, where are they now? Well, what did it matter? What did it matter for the Jets have all those picks? The Browns have all those picks. Yeah, you don't worry about stuff like that. You go out and you play the game, you try to win.
I'm actually having a tough time thinking of any team that has, like, been able to get, like, that, you know, crap load of picks for someone to go move up. Like, I think of Washington with the Ricky Williams trade, where they got, all of New Orleans draft, and it led to, no success at all. Like, it seems to be, teams that, lean in so heavy on those one drafts, it doesn't necessarily come out well for them. For May's other injury, it's a hand injury he's been dealing with.
Dan, thank you. I know he had a concussion a few weeks ago. And on the other side, the Patriots, it's the same thing. Now, look, I think they're in a different situation than the Bills here, which have, you're playing the team that has the chance. You're playing your guy. You're going to the playoffs. The Patriots, yeah, of course there's going to be people inside the Patriots organization who'd rather not win this game, right? I mean, that would help everybody to get the number one pick. There's no doubt about that. But it's the same thing for them. Like, if you think about the guys who are playing in the game and Gerard Mayo, like, you can't just – I guess the way to say it is, are you going to purposely set them up for failure during the game? I mean, I don't know. I have a hard time believing Gerard Mayo is going to do something like that, nor should he. Brian Flores, apparently was asked to do that a few years ago, by management with the Miami Dolphins. And he said, screw you. Like, I'm the coach. I'm trying to win games. Like, I owe it to the people in the locker room here. And I respect that. Like, that's what you're supposed to do.
Sal, shifting back to the Bills here real quick. So talking on injuries and stuff like that, how could that potentially affect, who starts, who sits, who might get called up from the practice squad? Terrell Bernard specifically, he's not going to play. Like, does that really impact, aside from Joe Andreessen, does it impact anything else, call-up-wise? Or how's that going to look for the Bills?
Well, linebacker it won't, because they don't have any call-ups. They have no practice squad linebackers, guys. They have one guy on injured reserve, Bale Inspector. Everybody else is on the active roster. You're going to see probably a lot of Joe Andreessen, Eddie Ulofosio, and Nicholas Morrow, I would guess, in this game. I bet you those guys all play in some capacity. I wonder what they do with Milano and or Dorian Williams. But at linebacker, it doesn't. But it does matter around the roster, Josh, because you only get two elevations. And I even asked Sean McDermott yesterday, are we expecting Mike White to play? Like, is that something that they're going to do? And he said it's going to be tough to get Mike White even on the active roster to call up, because look around. Like, you only get two elevations. This is not a preseason, 90-man roster, right? I mean, you can't just suddenly put in all these different backups and practice squad guys. You can't do that. The rules don't allow you to do that. You would have to literally cut players from your active roster and put them on waivers just to get more than two guys up from the practice squad. You're obviously not doing that. And think about it this way. Josh Allen's going to start, right? We know that. Well, do you want backup offensive linemen in there when Josh Allen's in there? No. You want starters, I would think, in there. So you're going to get probably your starting offensive line for whatever amount of snaps. And then from there, you only have four reserves. If you call Will Clapp up, you have five. I mean, so now to me, you probably want to do that so you can at least put five new guys in on the offensive line. But guys, from there, that only leaves one more elevation throughout the whole roster.
Sal, how much of the college football did you watch yesterday? Because I know me as a Texas fan, I was in a glass case of emotions. Let's just say
that. I did not watch any of the first game, the Texas game, until about the third quarter. I mean, I saw the score was kind of a blowout. We were over at my parents' house, and my mom was making dinner, and I turned on. I'm like, whoa, okay, let me check this game out now. And that's when everything was kind of happening for Arizona State coming back, and wow, what a fantastic game. Felt so bad for the kicker, but then, it obviously worked out in the end. Fourth and 13, was it, that they gave up for the touchdown? Oh, my God. I mean, how do you let that happen? If you are an Arizona State fan, it is just something that's going to live with you for so long. It's like 13 seconds with a Bills fan, right? It's like you had them. You're right there. Like, you could have been in the semifinal. You make one stop on fourth and 13, and you win the game. And they couldn't do it. And then last night, I guess I was pretty surprised. I thought Ohio State could win. But, man, the way they just demolished Oregon was just ridiculous.
And also, the wide receiver factory. I will put this on paper. I still think LSU is the wide receiver factory for the NFL. Ohio State, you lose Marvin Harrison Jr. You may have upgraded with a true freshman in Jeremiah Smith. It's absurd.
He is amazing, right? I mean, Dan Orlovsky said he thinks a team could tank for him in a couple of years. I don't know. That's a wide receiver. You know what I mean? Like, you're really tanking for a wide receiver?
Right,
I mean,
right.
I know that he's fantastic, but a little hyperbole there, I think, but he is fantastic, no doubt about it. It just seems like Oregon every year this happens to them, right? Doesn't it? My brother got his PhD at the University of Oregon, so we follow the Ducks pretty good. He's always, he's a big Ducks fan. He went there, and so we follow them pretty closely. And I just feel so bad because, for that fan base, because it seems like every year they have this great team, they get in this position, and then they can't close the deal.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm a Texas fan, but I always liked Oregon, kind of that Pac-12 after dark, and it felt like Oregon would be like 10-0, and then they'd play Stanford at night, and they lose. Like, it always felt like that's what it was. It was Stanford with, like, Kevin Hogan, and you're like, really? That's who you lost to? All right.
I know. So what do we got? Texas and Ohio State.
Texas and Ohio State. That's going to be the Cotton Bowl in Dallas. So Texas will have the home crowd. Yeah. And then today at 4, we do have Notre Dame and Georgia. Sadly, that game had to been postponed to today due to the terror attack in New Orleans. And then they'll play the winner of that game will play Penn State next Thursday. Texas and Ohio State's going to be next Friday night.
Notre Dame's not beating Georgia, are they?
I think they are. Me and Sneaky Joe, we both got a bet that Notre Dame's going to win the national title. Georgia's got their backup quarterback, and since losing to Northern Illinois, Notre Dame's put teams away.
Yeah, then UB beat Northern Illinois the next week, by the way.
Their second ever ranked win in program history, Pete Lembo. I mean,
What are you thinking about what is the what's the word on Ohio State, Texas? I think you got to lean Ohio State at this point, the way they're playing.
I think Ohio State's going to kill them. Yeah.
Do we really think they can keep this consistency going, though? I mean, come on. Like, it's a Ryan Day-led team.
Sal, I'm sitting there with my girlfriend last night, and I'm like, we're busy next Friday night. She goes, cool, what are we doing? I'm like, we're watching Texas. And she goes, oh, are you excited? I'm like, nope, but we got to be loyal to the brand. We're going to sit through this whole thing. You're going to sit there with me, and we're going to watch them lose. She goes, you don't have to do that. I'm like, no, we got to be loyal to the brand. We got to be there to the end. I think right now Ohio State's a 6.5-point favorite. I could see that rising a little bit.
Yeah. Well, we got the Bills have practice at noon today, guys. Mm-hmm. So I'm down here at One Bills Drive. We'll keep you updated on the latest injury report and what's happening from down here. And then players will talk a little bit after practice today.
And then Sean McDermott joining you tomorrow morning during the
extra point. On the extra point show, on this show, right around 11 o'clock, I would guess. We'll confirm that up today, but we'll get an official injury report as we roll into the weekend and the game Sunday at New England.
Sounds good, Sal. Talk to you soon. Thanks for joining with us.
You got it, guys. Thanks.
That was Sal Capaccio there on the West Her Hotline.
The guys, you know, specifically us up front and even the whole offense, he has a relationship with each guy. He's got a handshake with each guy. That's real. That's genuine. That makes people want to play for you and play hard for you. And so he's the first guy, you know, when other guys have success to give you, you know, your credit and talk about life outside of football. He just does such a great job of forming genuine, real relationships with each person.
Bills offensive lineman David Edwards on Bulldog right there. High praise.
I'm a man of the people.
Welcome to 2025.
It's the first time I've heard that said. Watched the ball drop, but I don't think I had the sound. I haven't had to write or say. Do you write checks anymore? I haven't written a check in 6 months.
Where is this going?
2025. Like, I don't know what. Oh, right. Normally I would, you know, maybe. Well, it's only the second day of the year, but this sounds weird. I don't know.
I get so annoyed by anybody that needs me to write a check. Yeah. Can I just touch your phone with mine?
It took me a while to get there, but I finally.
Can I just wiggle my nose? And you have the money?
I finally did. I set up auto pay for everything, and then you know what happened? My debit card expired, and I had to go into every, and like one of something I forgot. You know, like I just didn't make all the rounds, and so eventually maybe it was Easy Pass. I don't remember who, like something I got out of, like, you're way behind on payments, and your card's expired. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll go in and fix that. Yeah, so that was kind of annoying.
It was your cleaning staff.
I did not time it very well.
I think it was your cleaning staff that you're thinking of was the one that you didn't
2025
set up the automatic payments.
Yeah, that's it. Yes,
the clean. It's for your haberdasher. Your haberdasher didn't get his $30 a month.
The person who's in charge of cleaning my what's the Trista thing? The
credenza.
The person who takes care of our credenza. I needed to update my credit card info for them.
Your credenza card.
My credenza team.
Matt is on WGR. Hello, Matt.
Hey, guys. You know, the Pro Bowl thing, on one hand, it's upsetting kind of because the Bills have a lot of good players, but they don't really get the recognition, especially on defense, maybe partially because of the scheme that they run. They don't put up the numbers that some other players would. But I mean, you look and you see the Colts have like three Pro Bowlers, and it's like, come on, huh? And
who, the Colts?
On the one hand, it's upsetting, but you know, it also points to maybe that the Bills are in well, probably more than any other team in the NFL, is a sum that's greater, a whole that's greater than the sum of its parts. And I think possibly, especially on defense, that maybe one of the reasons why they struggle so much in the playoffs is because at times you just need individual players to be able to step up and kind of like take over in certain situations.
There you go.
I don't think we had those, you know, mm-hmm. like Chris Jones or someone like that. Because even if you look back at the Super Bowl years with the Bills, we talked about their offense was explosive and this and that, and the defense was never that good in the regular season, but you look at the four AFC championship games, and in total they allowed 26 points in those games. And so, yeah, the offense was explosive, but when the defense needed to step up, they had a lot of really, really good players.
Right. No, it's a good point, I think. I think there's some merit to this.
Yep. I do, too. It's part of the reason, I mean, Benford is so good, you should just be playing man. Well, he's so good playing this way, right? He's getting great results for you playing this version of the defense. So I don't just assume that any guy can just do it a different way, but this is a very, I think, good point inside of the larger point that we've talked about for almost an hour now, like their style of defense and how they go about it. Yeah, I think it makes sense, too. Like, it doesn't lend itself. We don't know. Maybe Benford could have seven picks if he played more man coverage than he does. But he doesn't play a lot of man, at least a little. He plays a little more than maybe we think, like Sal said last segment. But, you know, it's you got to have some stats for that stuff. And nobody's really got them. You know, like, who are the guys you'd be looking at? Milano missed most of the year, missed most of last year. Von Miller's coming off of a horrible year last year, coming back from an injury, and, you know, is playing 20 snaps a game. You know, who's next?
Rousseau,
maybe? Like,
well, I feel like defensive ends, Max Crosby, Miles Garrett, Trey Hendrickson.
Right. TJ Watt isn't even on that. Is he a linebacker on this or something, or is he
yes.
not even there? Okay.
He's an outside linebacker.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, who's supposed to be there, you know?
Cook is maybe my answer. Derrick Henry, Joe Mixon, Jonathan Taylor. He could have come in over Mixon, but they are almost identical, like in yards. Not in yards per carry, but in yards and in touchdowns. Like, Mixon's up there. He's also more famous. Like,
right.
Benford is not famous. He was not a high draft pick. You can't say this year that the Bills aren't high profile, though. They've been good for a number of years, mm-hmm. and, you know, everything that comes with that, they've been
primetime exposure all over the place. Right.
But it didn't really happen. I think maybe there's a good point here about just, like, your point is right. Nate, who's the guy? You know, who should have made it? Like, that, there's some merit to that. The caller's point is smart, I think. Maybe they just don't have enough difference makers that are obvious stars, and Miller obviously was that. I mean, that was an effort to do that a couple of years ago on their
right.
defense, but his injury and then his age.
I think of the guys that, you know, didn't get named that have a case, I think Cook has the strongest case too. But it's not, to me, a blowout, you know? And the point about who's more famous matters, you know? Like, this maybe we'll see if this all changes once the Bills choose who they're going to pay. And if they have more success here. Like, I mean, they've had success, but they've not been to the Super Bowl yet. They've only been to the one AFC title game. So that's where a lot of the name gets made. And then, you know, guys will need to get paid. Shakir eventually is going to need a contract. Cook, we'll see what happens there. Rousseau is up for a contract. Benford will be up for a contract. One of the ways guys become known commodities and stars in the league is when their turn comes up and they get the 5-year, $150 million contract. Everybody goes, oh, wow, what a great player.
Cook also, for his part, 197 rushes, which is the second lowest of anybody in the top. He's 17th in the league in rushing, so let's just say 17. Only Bucky Irving has 9 fewer carries than Cook. Cook, 197. Derrick Henry, 305. I mean, more than 50% more. If you can't, and you shouldn't, because part of it, his success is workload, and you know he's not built like Derrick Henry.
Right.
But if you were to put 50% more numbers up on Cook's season to give him the same opportunities as Henry, you would have 20 touchdowns. You know, you'd have maybe 1,400, 1,500 yards. Derrick Henry, by the way, so his production was starting to come down, but the last 2 weeks, 55 touches, 354 yards. And they'll play to win Saturday. They are a 20-point home favorite against Cleveland. Just wonder if they might like to
get out in front and rest some people. That would make sense. Yeah.
Saturday, the day of that game, is Henry's 31st birthday. In the last 7 seasons, he's over 10,000 rushing yards just in that amount of time. 10,051. That's it. That's the whole tweet. Saquon Barkley will not play this week. He's at 2,005 yards, leading the league in rushing, of course, 100 shy of the record. Are you surprised?
No. I thought all along, when we would talk about if he gets the record, because, you know, MVP, right, is no way a running back's winning it. Well, what if he gets the record?
Right.
I think consistently I said, I just don't think he'll get the record. They're gonna shut him down eventually, you know, if they're locked in, and sure enough they are. So, no, I'm not surprised. I think it makes all the sense in the world. I think it would be almost insane in this atmosphere that we live in now with resting guys and not taking these chances if Nick Sirianni went out in front of microphones and said, yeah, well, actually, we're going to play in the whole game and get him the record. That would be incredible. So I'm not surprised in the least that he's shut down for this game.
Philadelphia locked into the 2. There aren't that many games this weekend. Everybody's playing. There's no Thursday night tonight. They're all Sunday or Saturday, 2-1 Saturday and then Sunday. There aren't many games that are looking very good. Both teams incentivized to win. Even the teams like the Steelers, in the event of a Raven win, or like the Rams are going to sit their guys where seeding could be affected, they seem like they don't care.
Yeah.
The Rams don't care about slipping to the 4 seed, which they could do if they lose to Seattle. So Stafford is supposed to sit. It's very much like the preseason. The right. Bills will be like that too. Maybe the Patriots too.
We'll see. Like I know it's not, I said this to Sal a little while ago. I know it, you know, he's playing. It's Thursday. Like, I don't know. Like to me, ownership could still make a call. And even with Mayo, if he's at all on shaky ground with the people above him, they might feel like it's an opportunity to kind of test him a little bit. Like I wouldn't put it past the Crafts at all to try to intervene there on May playing.
Boy, every time you say Mayo, I think you're going to go into the Ross Tucker read.
Yeah.
Plus, you said Kraft.
Wow, look at that. I'm all over it. Said advertising, it works.
Mayo, Crafts.
Well, I got to tell you something about a mistake that I was making about a product that's now being aired on, maybe I'll just do it now. Lake Hour is like seltzer canned cocktails, right? We've had them in the house. They're good. Love them. I think we had them here at the Christmas party. They to my ears, only started running ads on our station like this fall. Like this football season when I noticed the ads. For a couple of years, I've been sitting in a spot in a bar with a cooler full of them, the labels like facing out at me. There's signage in the restroom right above the urinal. Same, the Lake Hour.
Location.
It wasn't until I heard the ads on our show that I realized the name of that product was Lake Hour and not Lake House. In my head, staring at the cooler.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say for how many hours at a time, but like frequently in this spot. Using that restroom, drinking it out of my refrigerator at home.
Not the urinal.
I thought, Lake House. This thing is called Lake House. I heard the ad here. I'm like, oh, that's weird. There's another company that makes that product that's got a slightly different name. I went back to the bar. I'm like, I'm such an it. Like, I don't know what kind of dissonance this was from me that I just could not see Lake Hour on the label, but I didn't.
You got to the HOU and you thought it was house. I mean, lake house is a thing.
Yeah.
Lake hour is maybe not a thing.
Right.
Takes the snap, quick hitter, thrown behind, but somehow caught, and now lateral to Allen, and reaching for the pylon. Are you kidding me? It's a touchdown. Unbelievable. A catch by Amari Cooper, a lateral to Josh Allen, and he runs the remaining 5 yards for the score. Have you ever seen that one before?
Certainly a candidate for play of the year for the Bills. It's our final regular season football Friday. Jeremy and Joe, good morning. It's brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash, call Salino by Crosby's Pizza and Sub. Start your game day the Crosby's way. I've asked a couple different things today to kind of wrap up the year. Like, what's the greatest, what's the best success? The biggest, I don't want to say surprise, but whatever. What has gone as good as it could? And what has left you wanting more? 803-0550-1-888-550-2550. Have a bunch of answers to this. A lot of people writing back in on Twitter, give our answers. You know, we flowers for Joe Brady and what he did with this offense, how it's really all come together. And the name I teased going to the break, the name that was really disappointing or left wanting more, an awful lot of Dalton Kincaid mentions.
Yeah.
Because he's just not really a big part of what they do. I guess you could make the case he's in there with Everybody Eats and you don't want, I don't know. But for a first-round tight end, best pass catcher in this draft, he is very rarely a big part of a game. And I think there are people out there that think there's still plenty more to unlock in there, and maybe that happens in a playoff game. Maybe there's a matchup they like somewhere along the way. But, you know, 44 catches, 448 yards.
I wonder, too, though, because have they tried to make him a bigger part of the game and it's just hasn't worked? Because, like, there are so many numbers that point to, man, this number two among all tight ends in unrealized air yards with 400.
There is a weird thing. Allen, when he throws the ball away, I texted you this during the game.
You did, yeah.
Was it the... It was this week
because he threw a ball away that was in the direction of Kincaid, but it was it was a mile out of bounds.
The unrealized air yards, some of those, I don't think they're Allen missed the target.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, maybe it's just me, an oddly high number of his throwaways while running are throwaways toward Kincaid that have no chance of being caught. Like on that sup, and Allen throws it away, and the nearest guy is Kincaid. Does that go as like unrealized air yards? I don't know.
That might be the case, and I feel like that would be unfair. There are definitely targets, though, that are just they are not on the same page. Allen throws it low. Kincaid's a little higher than he should be, or maybe Allen, you know, just missed it. Whatever it is. Some of them might be, again, like Allen doesn't throw the ball in high volume to tight ends. Like he almost feels like sometimes he throws the ball to Kincaid like he's a wide receiver, but he isn't. He's not as fast as a wide receiver. You have to throw the ball in a different place because he's not moving as fast as Amari Cooper is when he's running across the middle. So, yeah, I'll look. Maybe find like how many of those are throwaways, but, man, like true catch percentage. Yeah, these are all at the tight end position. True catch percentage, 27th in the NFL. Contested catch rate, 23rd in the NFL. I mentioned that unrealized air yards stat for him. Snap share, 32nd. Route participation, 18th.
Yeah.
You know, that might point to he's just not on the field as much. Targets, 13th. There's just nothing here that looks great. He's number one among all tight ends in deep targets. That's a little surprising. How many of those are catches, though? Like, none of them?
Not many.
One or two?
Can remember him missing Kincaid against the Texans. I think it's the Texans.
Yeah.
That's
so just
a long time ago.
I'm just, man. It just does. And then, of course, catchable target rate, 35th among tight ends, 65%. There was a point in the year where he had the most uncatchable targets in the league. And again, maybe some of those are throwaways, but I don't know. That is maybe the most disappointing. I'm surprised they've been able to be as good as they are offensively with the Kincaid part of their offense just not really hitting.
Yeah.
It's like the biggest drop in catch percentage from one year to the next by a tight end like ever.
803-0550. The other thing I was looking at, I'm looking at the Baltimore game. It's a long time ago.
Yeah.
What do you remember about the game?
What do you remember about Baltimore?
The trick play, the Henry touchdown right at the start that kind of set the tone, right? I remember Baylen Specter being in the game and getting picked on relentlessly. And I remember the Bills not being able to do anything on offense.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a forgotten point.
Like, their only big play the whole game was a broken play, Allen right against the sideline, right? To Shakir?
Yeah, deep.
That's, like, the only thing they did the whole game, it felt like.
Yeah, Allen threw 16 of 29 for 180. No touchdowns. No picks. He got sacked 3 times. That's what's amazing.
Yeah, that never happens.
He got sacked 14 times the entire year. And he got sacked 3 times in Baltimore. So, and I was just thinking about this Baltimore matchup and, you know, whether it's the Chiefs or the Ravens or the Bengals or, you know, who else could they meet in the playoffs? Like, these are the three teams people, I think, give a shot to beat the Bills. The Bengals aren't even in the playoffs, and people would give them a shot or be a little bit, whatever, respectful of a Joe Burrow offense.
Yeah.
For Baltimore, Baltimore and Buffalo are tied, of course, by the MVP conversation. And the more interesting thing that will ultimately be determined at the end of this year is which of these quarterbacks goes farther. Because the way that the bracket will line up is that one of them should make the AFC Championship game. And that's either going to be 2 in a row for Lamar or Allen getting back there for the first time. And then, you know, playoff Lamar is still kind of a thing. He did not have a strong AFC Championship game against the Chiefs last year. So these two teams and it's almost like they're at a crossroads or whatever. Like, only one is going to get to add to their story, and if it's go to Kansas City to play the Chiefs, here we go. Yeah. If this Baltimore game that the Bills had back early in the season happened, what would the offseason be about? Stopping the run? Henry ran for 199 in that game.
Mm-hmm.
A pretty big day. 85, of course, on the first carry. And then the rest of the carries, still a good day. That's 23 for 114. Like, that's still pretty good, too.
Yeah.
So he ran all over their faces in this game. Baylen Specter is in it. Like, again, they're missing pieces.
Yeah, right. They're missing. They had, you might say Dorian Williams is actually maybe even a better option, but they had two different linebackers in that game than they might have the next time they play him.
Yeah.
Right, like you had Specter and Williams, and you might have Bernard and Milano. And there's good signs about Milano from last week, so that would help. Sal mentioned last hour, like, the next time they see Baltimore, maybe they go 3 linebackers a lot. And Williams might be important to that because he's the 3rd linebacker. He also, man, like, if you are gonna do that, you got to be, like, if I'm Baltimore, I know exactly what I would do. Every single time the Bills have 3 linebackers out there, I am dropping back to pass, and I'm going to try to pick them apart. And you might think Lamar would have a huge advantage in terms of scrambling if there's a 3rd linebacker out there. The one thing I do like about Williams is how athletic he is. Like a 4.48 40 time or something. Like, he ran a faster 40 time than more than half the Bills wide receivers. Like, he might be somebody that could do okay. Maybe. I mean, speed-wise, he's there where he could do okay with Jackson. You might also think he's undisciplined enough where Jackson would just destroy him in the open field. So that's why they terrify me. I don't know that there's a good option. Go ahead, put 3 linebackers on the field and stop Derrick Henry. I would rather they continue to play nickel and say that Jackson is the one we are not going to let go off against us. We'll do our best. We'll hope Bernard being back in will be the big difference between Henry going off and not. Henry has had a couple big runs against the Bills in the past, but he has not been this unstoppable force every time he's played them. A lot of his production is on a couple runs, and the Bills have largely played nickel in all those games. You might say Tennessee's different, but I don't know. I'm pretty afraid of them no matter what, even knowing they'll have advantages in this game, the Bills will, that they didn't have available to them earlier in the season.
Looking at Derrick Henry's career splits against the Bills. In his career, he's played the Bills 6 times. He's at 93 yards per game on the ground.
Okay.
On like 18 attempts.
I bet that's lower than his average. No?
It's not bad. He's got a couple teams. He averages 100 yards. Like, he averaged 100 against Jacksonville and Seattle and Washington. But in 6 games, 93 yards. Like, Henry's something to, of course, be afraid of. The thing about that game that you remember, the 85-yard touchdown run, of course.
Yep.
And Baltimore that game had no problem doing anything. They had lots of long drives. So while they hit the Bills early with an 85-yard touchdown run on the first play, there's a one-play drive. Their next drive was 9 plays, 70 yards. And then 10 plays, 81 yards. And then in the second half, 6 plays, 59 yards. 6 plays, 62 yards.
Mm-hmm.
They did not get short fields. They just did whatever they wanted to. And for the Bills to beat Baltimore in the divisional round, if it comes to that, you know, here we are ahead of not just, you know, this game against the Patriots, but now moving past a potential game with the Broncos. If they get to the divisional round and play Denver, or play Baltimore, you will need your defense to be a lot different, and you will need your offense to be a lot different. I mean, Allen 180, and they did not run the ball well at all. That's back in a time when Baltimore's pass defense was giving up huge plays,
yeah,
and the Bills had nothing. So you kind of hope this, the evolution of this offense, the growth of Keon Coleman, the introduction of Amari Cooper, like, but that it makes this game very different than the first one. I almost want to say the first matchup means almost nothing. How much should I put in it? I feel like I want to put almost nothing in the first matchup. I know who Derrick Henry is. I know who Lamar is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're a very good team. They present some problems, but the first matchup, I mean, everything went Baltimore's way, in part because the Bills played terribly. No doubt about that.
What did Baltimore do in that game? They took away the middle of the field, and they said, go ahead, I dare you to throw it to the outside.
And Shakir was hurt in this game.
He was hurt in early on, too.
Right, but this was back at the low point of Mac Hollins, where
yep.
Like, he's a nice role player. In this game, Baltimore, he had 6 targets and had 1 catch for 5 yards.
That's what I mean. Like, were saying, go ahead, throw it to him. Throw it to the outside, and now it would be tested, right? Like, the Bills are much better personnel-wise for that right now. If Baltimore said the same thing, well, we're taking away the middle. Go ahead. Throw it to the sideline. See if you can do it.
Yeah,
the Bills are going to be better off now, but, like, are we sure that's going to be good enough to carry them?
You mentioned Shakir and how he was hurt in that game, playing hurt.
Even on the touchdown, he was hurt.
He didn't have a touchdown this game. You're thinking
he didn't
about,
have a deep one?
No, he had a 52-yard catch.
Oh, it went down to like the one or something?
Yes, okay. It got deep into Ravens territory. But the rest of the game, outside of that broken play, like, think of how Shakir has often been an easy button for Allen. If you take away that one big broken play, Shakir in that game had 4 targets and 3 catches for 10 yards. Yeah. So they had next to nothing against Baltimore the first time. And I just do think that now it's I know it's the same offense, but it's just a different offense to me.
No, it is. There was no Cooper. Did Coleman play in that game? I don't remember any plays by him.
He did play in that game.
Okay. But you've got Cooper, and like that is that not why they traded for him?
Well,
in a game like that where a team dares you to do that, you traded for Cooper like what, 10 days after that game? The Houston game, obviously, too. Or no, actually, because of the Jet game also. So maybe it was a few weeks after. But whatever. You traded for Amari Cooper for that spot.
Yeah.
For a team like Baltimore to dare you to do it, and then, okay, well, now we have a guy we could do it with.
There's one other thing that jumps off the page looking at this box score of the first Baltimore game. How many catches from running backs?
I mean, they threw the ball. Didn't they have to throw the ball a lot because they were down?
They threw the ball 29 times. I mean, Allen had 29 attempts. How many targets? We're going to do targets for running backs or catches for running backs?
I don't remember a certain play, so how many?
One.
One catch or one target?
One target.
One target?
One target.
Wow.
Isn't that something that's
that's crazy.
Very different now? You might feel like, I mean, Ty Johnson was not a part of their offense in this game. He didn't get a target, didn't get a catch.
Did he get a touchdown, though?
James Cook had one catch for 9 yards. Ty Johnson had a touchdown, a 3-yard rushing touchdown.
I think
touchdown.
He finished off the Shakir drive, or the Shakir play. But okay, but not involved in the pass game, which is his thing.
Right.
So.
And it's almost like this offense has kind of evolved over the course of the year.
Yeah.
You know, from that was back when Everybody Eats was like, oh, yeah, sure, Everybody Eats.
Oh, that was like
the low point of it.
Yeah. Easily.
Lots has changed, including their willingness to incorporate running backs and all that.
That 2-week stretch, really, like, because remember, Allen had the worst completion percentage in like 30 years for like a certain qualification the next week against Houston. Like, maybe, like, if Shakir getting injured. Like, I wonder how impactful that really was. Because he's put up good numbers this year. I don't think he's like an elite receiver, but he is very good. He is certainly the Bills' best player at the position. And he got hurt early on against Baltimore, and then he didn't play against Houston, and look what it looked like. Yeah, I know Cooper's different too, but look what it looked like when Shakir was either not able to be himself or wasn't on the field at all. Like, they couldn't do anything.
Mike in Tonawanda's up. Hey, Mike, good morning. Happy New Year.
Hey, happy New Year to you guys. Actually, I'm taking the words right out of your mouth. I honestly feel like that game earlier this season was just like an outlier game, because if you look at it, I remember not too long ago, we were saying how McDermott matches up well against Lamar. Lamar never really has his best games against McDermott defense. I mean, just look back at the matchups over the years. Even in Lamar's MVP season in 2019, yeah, the Ravens won the game, but we're the only team that really kind of put them in check that year other than that playoff game they lost, the Ravens did. But, like, even you look at the one 2 years ago in Baltimore when we were down, like, 20-3 and we came back and won that game. I just think the one earlier this season was just a one-off, to be honest with you. Like, I mean, could we still lose to them if we played in the division round? Sure. But I don't expect it to be anything close to what that was. And I expect Buffalo to beat Baltimore next time around for all the reasons you guys just said.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Thinking about the previous Lamar games, like he was fine, of course, in this game. His passer rating was 135. But again, they're playing from in front. Henry is eating. They're two-dimensional every single way. He was 13 of 18 for 156.
Henry, by the way, like, he's really only gone off in two of the six Bills meetings games against the Bills. I'm looking, like, starting 2018 and then moving on. Most of these are more recent than that. 11 for 56. Fine. 20 for 78. Fine. 19 for 57. Great. 20 for 143 and three touchdowns. Tough.
Is that Tennessee?
That's Tennessee. These are all Tennessee.
These are
games.
All Tennessee so far. Because Tennessee.
Right. Tennessee's different. 13 for 25. Yeah. That's great.
At the end of his time there, their line was a mess. And now he's in a place where, of course, it's a better ecosystem for him.
That's right. But even in the middle, like in his prime, like the year they're the one seed and they beat the Bills, or is this a different game? They're getting mixed up. But in Tennessee, he went off against the Bills one time.
Yeah.
So I know different offense, different threats. You can key in on it a little more if you want. Jackson's history against the Bills, I don't know. Like, I don't know what to do with Jackson on anything historical, because if I do that, I have to think he's going to not perform when he gets to the playoffs. And I just, the way he's playing right now, I'm not betting on that. I don't want to, if it happens, like, it's going to become a real strong narrative of his, but.
Right, because he's having the best year of his career.
Yeah, and the way that looks, I don't want to bet on his playoff struggles continuing. Eventually, they won't.
Yeah. I mean, we could just get an old-fashioned shootout where both quarterbacks play great and somebody loses.
And the Bills win a classic, like 42-36 or something.
My heart can't take it. 803-0550, it's Football Friday. You want to give us a call on this? We're not exactly previewing Bills-Ravens, but, you know, we're kind of talking about it.
We kind of just
I guess that happens.
I mean, it's probably going to happen, right? What are the odds right now? What would you say? Just guessing. Like, is it 80% that they're going to play in the divisional round? Is that too high?
That might be a little high, but the thing of it is, we don't know who the first-round opponent is, and we have a pretty good idea what the second-round opponent would be. Aren't you more confident you know?
Yeah.
The second round than you do the first?
Well, for it to be Baltimore, you need one of two things to happen. That means either lose to the Cleveland Browns with Bailey Zappe this
or
week,
lose their first round matchup to the Chargers.
Which is the more likely
outcome
if something does happen. Yeah, so maybe it's not 80, but
803-0550. Then of course they could play Pittsburgh. And the Bills could be playing Pittsburgh and the Chargers. They play Pittsburgh.
No, if Pittsburgh were to win, then they would play the winner of Houston and LA.
We're mixing it all up. I'm talking about if Pittsburgh went to Baltimore in the playoffs and won.
Yeah.
And then the Chargers beat the Texans.
The Bills would play the Chargers.
The Chargers are the 7? No, because the Chargers are the...
Be the 5.
5, right.
And Chiefs are the highest 6. Seed. They play the lowest, which be Pittsburgh. Yep.
Too many... This reseeding. I'm too old for this now. Reseeding hurts my brain.
Should they go to a bracket?
No. Reseeding is good. I support reseeding.
You'll see some starters out there playing, and you'll see some other players who we want to take a good look at. So it'll be a blend of both. In Josh's case, one of the things that we know is very, very important to him is his consecutive starts streak, if you will. And it's important to him for a great reason. He wants to be out there with his teammates. And so he will be out there for a very, very short-lived amount of time, and then he'll be off rather quickly there.
There's Buffalo Bills head coach Sean McDermott yesterday with the media talking about the plan for this Sunday, a 1 p.m. kickoff matchup on the road against the Patriots to wrap up the regular season. Josh Allen and a number of the starters or expected starters will be out there for a very short time. Again, you know, me and Josh joked there at the start of the show. It seems to be more just to get Josh his start streak continuing to go. That's one of his biggest ones, I guess, which I can totally understand. I know for Brett Favre, that was a huge thing, his Iron Man streak of just never missing games. And so I can understand that. And I didn't realize, Josh, how high he was. I was talking with Sal off air yesterday because I just want to know, like, because I kept seeing it around on Twitter, but like no one had put yet like the number. So I just asked him, like, yeah, Sal, off the top of your head, like, do you know where he's at? In my head, I'm thinking like, oh, he's at like 50, 60, around that area. Sal goes, oh, he's at like 114. And I was like, in my head doing the math, and I'm like, oh, so his rookie year was the last time he missed a game.
Yeah.
And it hadn't hit me until yesterday when McDermott and the media were talking about his start streak, where I'm like, I mean, he's dealt with injuries every year. We've had something pop up where, yeah, shoulders kind of give him issues. This year, it's his hand. You know, there's been other stuff that has come up that it's not necessarily that he's going to miss a game, but let's not act like he's been, like, impervious to wounds. Like,
no, yeah. Every time you see him hurdle someone, it's, okay, he's good.
Yeah, your heart's in your throat, and you're like, I'm going to miss this when you're done, but I currently kind of hate it.
We've been so, and I don't want to say this because I know Detroit is in this over their heads in terms of injuries, but we've had so many injuries over the past few years as, like, just seeing them as fans watching the games, where it's just every time you see someone go down, you're terrified because you're worried that they're going to be out for weeks, because you finally get Tre'Davious White back, 2 weeks later he gets hurt. You finally get Matt Milano back, and then he gets hurt. And then you finally get like all of these different players. So every time I see a player go down funny or awkwardly or doesn't get up right away, I get so scared. When Amari Cooper made that catch, it went from, oh my goodness, what a catch, to why is he still on the ground? What's happening? And then you think about it, he probably just had the wind knocked out of him for a second there.
Cooper?
Yeah.
Well, I thought it was wind knocked out of him. He did get checked out.
And I saw him go into the blue tent. I'm like, great.
I'm watching the game from home, and like immediately I'm just sitting there, and like me and my dad look at each other. I'm like, he can't breathe after that. I saw how he fell, and I went, Dad, hang out for a minute.
Yeah, just take your time.
We've all been there.
That can be, just lay there and maybe like do a little like snow angel. That'll be your celebration. Just catch your breath here. But I just. I want to see him get. I was like looking up, like, because I forgot how many Brett Favre actually had. 297.
Yeah, he's got a ways to go.
He's got a ways to go.
He's got a ways to go.
I think he can do it. I'm knocking on wood if you can hear it.
I don't know.
He can do it.
I will also say, though, looking back at Favre's streak, there was a lot of run there where like Favre hurt his team by staying in and playing.
Yeah.
And so. It'd be great for him to get it, but I also never want Allen to go in if he's going to compromise the team.
I think he has the same mindset in terms of that. Like this game is completely different because it's the end of the season. You're not hurt. We're trying to manage you so you don't get hurt.
Yeah,
and you're just going to play real quick and get out.
He has had moments though where like clearly you can see, oh yeah, he's dealing with something because like his throwing motion's a little off,
or he's not throwing as much,
or
not as far, or whatever. Like, yeah, it's there's been those moments, but I feel like he's found ways to work through them, and I think part of it's credit to Bill's training staff and everything like that, because they're great training staff helping all these players get healthy seemingly at the right time this year, hopefully. And it's one of those things where it's like, it's such a far off accolade, but it's also like, hey, imagine if you could get that. That'd be pretty cool.
It would be really cool. It is fun though. I don't love that week 18 doesn't mean anything, but it is nice for how much we were talking about the bye. The Bills are effectively going to get a bye. They are going to be able to, for the most part, rest their guys and be able to go into the playoffs as fresh as they can. Maybe not necessarily healthy. Mm-hmm. No one's really healthy at this point in the year. But they're able now to go into the playoffs fresh. I don't care how the New England game goes.
I'm not going to have any takeaways outside of like a key backup getting hurt. Like, there's not going to be any takeaways from me. I'm now just excited for who are they going to play in the wild card round? Who are they hosting? I've said it kind of since like the beginning of December. The team I want is Denver. That is who I want the Bills to play.
I'm right there with you.
I don't want a third matchup with a divisional opponent. I've never liked that. I think that's something, if you're Baltimore, you want to avoid Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. If you're the Chiefs, you kind of want to avoid the Chargers. Even though like the Chiefs are 2-0 against the Chargers this year. They've both been very close games. But like the Ravens, like they're starting to pick up wins against the Steelers. Like, mm-hmm. you know, Lamar specifically finally had like a good game against the Steelers. I don't like divisional matchups in the playoffs. It's a third matchup. It's difficult to beat a team three times in a row. I'm good. Bengals, I feel like not much needs to be said there.
Right.
Joe Burrow is playing maybe the best, you know, quote-unquote stereotypical quarterbacking of anyone in the NFL.
But their
T. Higgins has really come on. Chase is going to win the Triple Crown, I think, almost definitely at wide receiver.
But their defense is terrible.
And Chase Brown has a high ankle sprain, so there's a good chance he won't even be there to play the Bills anyways.
Yeah.
It's just you want to avoid having to play Joe Burrow, and this would be the likely, you know, kind of matchup. You want to avoid having to likely play Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes. Would it be awesome if the Bills could go 3-0 to a Super Bowl? Absolutely. But the playoffs are all about matchups. It's right. all about getting a little bit of luck where you need it.
And honestly, there's no way they can avoid all three. Unless, obviously, if the Bengals miss the playoffs, then there's one right out of the way. But I feel like if you do get to that AFC Championship game, you're going to have to play either Mahomes or Jackson. And we've said it all year. Give the Bills another shot at Baltimore, and they probably win that game. So I'm leaning Raven, and obviously it's way down the road, but I'd be leaving Ravens if that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, looking forward to the next week or so here, it's still, for me, I'm right there with you. You convinced me. It's Broncos all the way. Like, it needs to be Bills Broncos. But if it's Bills Dolphins, or if it's Bills Bills Bengals, I'm actually not that worried.
Yeah, their defense is bad.
The defense is bad enough where, Joe Burrow can go out and be Joe Burrow, but the Bills' offense can go out there and just do the same thing. And they've proven that time and time again this year against good defenses, against bad defenses, and even in games where they lose, the offense has looked fine, aside from maybe the Baltimore game.
Baltimore and Houston both.
Houston,
but
you can tell.
But since getting Amari Cooper, they've been fine.
Right. But even in the loss to the Rams, that offense was all over the place in terms of good way, not a bad way. Sorry, that sounded kind of in a bad connotation. But Allen scored 6 touchdowns against the Rams in a loss. The Rams were basically perfect, and that's how they beat the Bills. The Bengals' offense can be perfect, but we've seen so many times this year where they've lost games because their defense consistently lets them down and their offense can only do so much. That's been the story of their season, is Joe Burrow actually kind of has an MVP case, but because their defense is so bad, it looks like, it's Burrow's fault they're losing. No, it's not. It's really not.
It's like, he has to be perfect every single – that's, I think, the thing, too. The Bills – I don't know how sustainable it is, but they keep doing it every week. The turnovers.
Right.
They just, when they need a big play, they get one. Again, I don't know how sustainable that is. It's too late in the year to fix anything. This is what you're going to have.
Mm-hmm.
Burrow takes a lot of sacks. You saw it against Denver. Denver just couldn't muster much offense at all outside of a gorgeous throw by Knicks.
Yeah.
They, for the most part, just couldn't match the Bengals when they needed to get a score against a bad defense.
Yeah.
The Bills at home against the Bengals team that, let's say the game does start 7-0, 10-0 Bills, it just becomes, to me, the Detroit game.
Yeah.
Where sure the score line or ultimately the final score may be closer than you'd like that your heart would like. The Detroit game, Detroit was constantly chasing. Constantly. And I'd argue that's a better offense. It is. I mean, statistically, it's a better offense than Cincinnati. And the Bills were able to kind of just make them chase the entire game. I think the Bengals have just as bad of a defense. Again, I don't like the idea of having to go through Burrow, potentially Jackson, potentially Mahomes.
Yeah.
But that may happen. Now, with all that being said, they have easily the hardest route to get into the playoffs.
They need
both Denver and Miami to lose and them for themselves to beat Pittsburgh.
Right.
Who I think is going to be playing for seeding regardless.
Who's Miami playing the Jets?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, wait. I also finally saw
a good Tyler Huntley game, so like I feel better about it.
Broncos aside, you can't pick the Broncos.
Cool.
Dolphins or Bengals?
Dolphins.
Really?
Yeah, I know. I just trashed the Bengals. But like,
I would pick the Bengals personally. Like you kind of scared me so much with the whole Dolphins talk of playing them a third time, and you think about with the Dolphins, and I'm someone that I know the Bills can go out there and beat the Dolphins. I know it. Like Allen could go out there with his eyes shut and beat them, but a third time in a season where everything has been going your way. Something's going to give eventually, and I really don't want it to be against the Dolphins. I really think it would be something like that, where all of a sudden the Dolphins remember, hey, when Devon Achane runs against the Bills, he's really good, and we're not going to go away from that this time. We're just going to keep running him because that's what they did in the beginning of one of the games last year, and then in the second half they just stopped running Devon Achane and they lost.
Well, specifically, they figured it out, I think, the second game this year where it takes the Tyler Bass field goal. They just leaned on Achane. For me, it really comes down to two things. Number one, I haven't really seen the Dolphins ever really look all that great against Buffalo. Even then, it was more Tua was perfect and Achane was the driving force, and they still lost by three.
Right.
I've yet to see Tua or that offense play well in the cold. That is an honest assessment of them.
Yeah.
They do not play well in the cold. That Thanksgiving night against Green Bay, that was the moment for a lot of people of like, okay, you're starting to make a run here. You've won three straight. What can you do? 30-17, get out of here.
Yep. And honestly,
I think they're a poorly constructed team that can be fun in the offseason. They're fun against bad teams when they're all healthy. And the moment the environment gets against them, the moment a good team gets against them, they fold. That's who they are.
I think, too, like looking at all this and breaking it all down like this, there's pros and cons for any of the three potential opponents for the Bills.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, every single one I look at, the pros outweigh the cons. It's, yes, I know we have this. Mm-hmm. We all have this fear of the Bengals because of what's happened the past 2-3 years. They're the only ones to beat Kansas City in the playoffs. They're the only ones who have came into Buffalo and really shut things down. Like it's a sticking point for a lot of people, and I get that.
Yep.
But the way they look this year defensively, it's just not scary for me at all. And I get it. Joe Burrow has looked amazing. Ja'Marr Chase is nuts, and they're really good. But I just don't think they're good enough to outgun the Bills because they won't be able to get the stops that they need to kind of do what the Rams did. And then, again, you look at the Dolphins. What you just said, the cold, that's the biggest thing. It doesn't matter who's playing quarterback because none of them can play in the cold, it seems like.
It seems like just their entire offense. They don't really know what to do.
Yeah, and the argument for the Broncos all year has been, well, it's a rookie quarterback coming to Buffalo for his first ever NFL playoff game.
I'm all in for that. Yeah.
So, again, I'm not saying it's perfect all the way around, but there are very good – the pros outweigh the cons in almost every single matchup. And again, playoffs, you play the matchups. You try to get the best matchup for your team. And if you look at all the wild card matchups, the Bills probably have the best, the best ones.
I mean, I listened to the Nick Wright clip this morning too. Like, for every person bringing up, like, man, the Chiefs really don't want to see the Bengals in the playoffs. Why? Because they lost to them once, like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
They haven't lost to them since.
Right.
The Bills have genuinely beaten them every year. It just happens to be in the regular season, not the postseason. And I heard Wright kind of mention, he goes, I don't want Buffalo. Like, why would I want that?
Right.
Like, you serious? And I think that's probably fair for almost every team, maybe outside of Baltimore, because they did outright beat Buffalo on the road, a lot of that due to Derrick Henry and the Bills' offense never getting off the ground. I've mentioned it. I want another shot at them, even though they've looked better, because I just don't know if they will be able – and their defense has played much better up to this. I think the last, like, month and a half, they've been, like, top 10 in most categories. But the way the Bills have been playing, getting Amari Cooper and coming on as they have, I think it'd be a great game. I think the NFL is actively rooting for that in the division round. Let's get connected to our fans, though, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We go to Lee on the line. Lee, how are we doing today?
Good. How are you?
Doing very well.
Good. I have two things here. One with, I understand that the Bills, that this was supposed to be some type of rebuild year, but don't you think it's a little unfair that the guy from Minnesota is getting a lot of hype about coach of a year because of a guy tore his ACL or Achilles and they got Sam Darnold in there? Don't you think McDermott's name should be thrown around here for a little bit for what the job he's done, for all the pieces they lost? And my other thing is, I understand that the league wants parity here as far as, like, you know, tough games like what's going to happen this Sunday night with Minnesota and Detroit. There's going to be probably, if I'm correct, two teams that are going to have 14 wins, and they're going to go on the road and play a wild card. Do you ever think maybe they might go back to what they did the NFL seeding before, where number one and number two will have a bye week, and say, for instance, the Bills will end up playing Kansas City in the AFC Championship game, and the Bills are number two right now. Kansas City would actually have to come to Buffalo on that seeding because they beat them in the regular season. Do you ever think they might go back to that?
Well, on that point, Lee, it doesn't matter they beat them in the regular season. The Chiefs have one loss.
Right.
The Bills have three.
Higher seeds always host the game. That part doesn't matter.
Yeah. No matter how the season ended out, I mean, the Chiefs have one loss. The Bills have three. They're ultimately going to still be above them. That was the whole point, too, is even after they beat the Chiefs, it was like, okay, someone else needs to do their job, though,
right,
for this to be fun. In terms of the coach of the year, I do want to talk on this real quick here. I think the job Kevin O'Connell's done has been
incredible.
I think he should be the runaway favorite to win coach of the year.
Because he took a quarterback that year after year has had some success and then was written off. Some success and was written off. With the Jets, immediately written off.
The some success is also doing a lot of work. I mean, his highest passing touchdown total, I think, before this year was like 17.
Mm-hmm.
Darnold was more than written off. It was like, okay, you're going to Darnold. Matthew Collar, he covers the Vikings for Purple Insider. I don't think McCarthy was ever expected to start this year either before he tore up his knee. It was nice to see what he was doing in the preseason. I think the plan was always to play Darnold as long as possible, then go to McCarthy. Darnold looks unbelievable.
Yeah.
He's 4,000-yard passer. I think he's at 35 touchdown passes. They are going to be favored. I think even on the road, they may not be favored by Vegas. I think they're going to be able to beat Detroit with how bad Detroit's defense is and how good Minnesota is all
around. Not how bad it is, how banged up it is.
Well, yeah, but how ultimately hurt it is. I mean, this is the defense they have. It's not good.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's done an unbelievable job. Darnold was a non-factor for everyone going into the year. And even after he started the year well, everyone's expectations were, cool, when's it going to fall apart? They lost Christian Darrisaw. He didn't play good for like 3 weeks. I was somebody, too, that was like, all right, there's Sam Darnold.
Yeah.
Get ready for McCarthy next year. And then he turned it back on. And they have just – I think they've looked like the best team in football.
Does this make Sam Darnold a system quarterback?
No, I think it just makes Kevin O'Connell a really good coach. That like he was able to go from Kyle Shanahan. He learned a little bit under there, gets to O'Connell. And like now, I'm a J.J. McCarthy apologist. I thought he was great in the draft process. I thought Minnesota got a steal, especially with I have liked O'Connell. You have to bring back Darnold.
Mm-hmm.
You have to. He's 27. You signed to a 5-6 year deal.
You got him up now.
You have him for his prime career. You have the guys already in place. And someone we were talking about with Sneaky Joe before he walked out today, too. I think what could be really fun this offseason for them, Raiders. They're not going to be in line to get Shedeur Sanders or Cam Ward. Why don't you
Where are they at right now? Like 3 or 4?
I think they have 4 wins. So they're in like the middle of the top 10.
Yeah.
You have 2 threes. Trade your first and a third to get McCarthy. Trade a first and both threes to get McCarthy. You already have Brock Bowers.
Right, and then you get the quarterback.
You can get a young, fun quarterback in McCarthy, who I think is a coach's dream. Listen to any interview he gives. He's also got good size. He's got a great arm. He's athletic.
The only thing there, though, is...
That's going to be the fun thing.
I don't think the Raiders have the coach. And I don't think
I don't disagree with that.
Antonio Pierce is not the long-term solution. I don't even know who their coordinators are, but I look at that. That move is a move you make when you have your coaches.
They may think they have their coaches.
True.
I mean, I don't think they're going to fire him. And then you have Brock Bowers. He's been like one of the best rookies ever. He's over 100 receptions.
Scott Turner is the offensive coordinator for the Raiders.
Yeah. Okay. But
Look, I'll feel bad for McCarthy because I think he'll be going from one of the best situations to one of the worst.
Right. But
if
he would
you're
also
the Raiders,
be,
I think
be
it's
an
a
immediate,
move he should make.
He's an immediate starter.
Yeah.
Like, that's – there's no question
he's
there.
He's going to be better than Aiden O'Connell or Gardner Minshew or wherever else they've had.
Desmond Ridder.
Yep. And then in terms of McDermott not getting a lot of love for the coach of the year, kind of never has. You know, I hate to say it, but, like, he kind of never has. And this year, I think it doesn't help him that Josh Allen's his quarterback. You look at who's up there. You know, it's Dan Quinn is, I think, the favorite right now in terms of DraftKings. He's up there because he's leading what was perceived as a really bad organization, and it was, and a rookie quarterback, and they're going to go to the playoffs for the first time since 2020. Kevin O'Connell brought in Sam Darnold on a one-year deal worth, what, $10 million? They're potentially going to be the one seed in the NFC in the first time in which we have two teams in a conference with 14 wins. Or, I'm sorry, in a division with 14 wins, and they might have 15 and win the division. Harbaugh is up there. Due to the Chargers were really bad, and they're right back in the playoffs. Dan Campbell, I don't know. He's up there, and it kind of does bother me a little bit because I think he's kind of entered the period now where, you know, you're expected to be good. You don't get to just be the coach of the year now. We'll find out how good you really are when Ben Johnson's gone. Like, he's now entered that part of his career, like McDermott did when Dable left. But we'll see. I don't see McDermott really ever getting the coach of the year. It's the award has gone away from giving it to guys like Belichick, like Reed, and such like that. And it's gone to who is expected to be bad and turn out to not be terrible.
There's some teams that are harder to sneak the ball on if they've got some bigger guys and they have a good plan for that. Sometimes it is just man-on-man and low man wins, and again, just trying to find the right crease and trying to get 1 yard. And sometimes, you know, we've been pretty successful at it this year. Probably a couple times where I didn't do a good enough job, but it's definitely a powerful tool for us that maybe not a lot of teams can use it because of the size that we have up front. I'm at the quarterback and the guy usually behind me pushing, so...
Pro Bowler Josh Allen. The Bills rank second in the league this year at fourth down success percentage. 15 out of 18. 83.3% ranked second in the league. Allowed. They've allowed 16 conversions on 31 attempts. They're winning a lot. So you have games here where teams would feel like they have to go for it on fourth down. 51.6, and that's ninth best defensively. So 83.3, they've only been stopped on fourth down this year three times, and I'm sure that the majority, maybe the vast majority of those 18 were short yardage, which is such, do we not say it all the time? Does anybody not know this yet? Think of the effects, that advantage, like what it really affords you. How it shapes third down, or can, even second down.
Yep.
When you know, you pretty much know, that fourth and one or even fourth and two is in the bag, man, what an easy game. Bills and Patriots, Foxborough, 1 o'clock. They're going to play it. Drake May.
Yes, they are.
Drake May limited, second straight day. So also from talking to Joe Ostrowski earlier, it sounds like the Patriots want May to start, but he's not fully healthy, so, you know, maybe he shouldn't. They get the number one pick if they lose.
Yeah.
Have you thought about that much?
Not really. I mean, I think I would expect them to see if they could trade it if they get it. I mean, you know, it really depends on what, you know, what consensus becomes about. Or really, I guess it just becomes about one team. If some team out there really wants, you know, whoever, Sanders or Ward, or, you know, one of the quarterbacks that probably isn't anywhere near as good as the guys the last couple of years, but still they're QBs, so they'll go early. If somebody gets really hot and bothered about that, then they could probably do pretty great if they move down, which is what I would advise. They need so much stuff. So to me, like, if you can get like a couple of linemen and a couple of skill players out of that trade, like, that's all I need to make sure I get the one.
Well, I'm not Chris Trapasso, but here's my guess. The top 5 to 10 teams in the draft order will be playing chicken all through the process because the quarterback or quarterbacks that will top the rankings will not be consensus, like, great picks. You know, there's division on that. Cam Ward or Sanders, like, they don't look to everybody like sure thing first round picks. Then you have the teams like the Patriots and I think the Bears And I think Carolina, you know, some of those teams will not be in the quarterback market, or at least probably a couple others too. Then you have teams like the Giants and the Jets and Tennessee, maybe, where everybody would think that they'd want to be, you know, if there's any way. But let's just try it, you know, whether one of those guys or someone else. So the Patriots, I think that's all logical. They'll just have to be able to make it worth doing. You know, there are years in the draft where people don't want the first pick, but that includes the other teams. And would you just take any best offer for that pick come the night of the draft, or would you sort of feel like, you know, it's probably better if we just take our guy and sell it than take a cheap offer for moving down?
I definitely wouldn't want to. I mean, I'd have to have some flexibility about the marketability of the pick, right? But I don't think I'd want to go too far with that, because it would get pretty easy to talk yourself into the best left tackle in the draft or whatever. Like, I got May last year, let's nail that down, and we'll just sort of build from there, you know?
Yep.
So that could make a lot of sense too. I think you could really clean up if somebody really is hot for somebody. And that's why I think for them, being at the top is like in a year where there's 3, 4, 5 quarterbacks, you could probably do pretty well trading the second or third pick, even if you want, and let somebody else go first. And like, here comes somebody from, you know, the 12th or 13th spot that doesn't have their guy, but they had a better year than, you know, whatever. So they're there and they want to come up and get a guy. I think you only got one shot at that, and it's the top, you know, unless somebody just falls in love so much with one of those QBs that they'll wait and take them too, and maybe pay a little less. But I just feel like the quarterback class not being highly thought of makes me feel like their chance to do well in a trade is to have the one, and everything else is a little sketchy after that. I think
the Raiders at 8 at the moment, going on and winning their last two games to move down to the draft order. It's very Raiders.
Oh, yeah.
Jets at 7 at this point. 9 teams at either 3 or 4 wins going into the final week. Chance is with us. Hello.
Hey, guys. I was just wondering if you think our defensive line is good enough to hold off the better offenses that we're going to face in the playoffs.
I think so. I mean, they're not the 85 Bears or the 01 Ravens or anything. Are they good enough? Yeah, I think they're good enough. I feel like these years, a lot of these years, as much of a beating as McDermott's defenses take, I mean, what kind of output am I having on offense? This is more true of the Cincinnati game than it is the Chiefs game last year. The Chiefs did whatever they wanted against the Bills, and they were injured pretty severely at that helped that along. I feel like if my offense is hitting, yes, it's good enough. I think in tandem, it's not a shutdown like, oh my God, I got to go play the Bills in that defense. But they're respectable. They keep a lot of stuff in front of them. They're going to make you earn it. Sorry about that. I think as long as the offense is, you know, humming, I'm not that worried about.
We're making you earn defense. It right now. We're making you earn it.
I do feel pretty good, though.
I think it's a reasonable question, and I don't know what will happen. So you can feel good about it or not. That's been part of the story with the Bills in these playoff losses, is they have not been, particularly against Kansas City. You can give them a pass for last year if you want, but they've been bad, ultimately. They've gotten really outplayed defensively in these games, and you've got the Chiefs again here, ultimately, probably. You've got the Ravens, very possibly. You know, maybe there'll be somebody else first, whoever that is. And this is an area where they probably will need to be better than what it's been in recent years. I do feel, as you know, like it's not something I'm often thinking about, because it's always, for me, I'm going to win through Allen or I'm going to lose.
Right.
And that's with a solid defensive line or a great one or a bad one or whatever. Like, that's still, it's possible to win without strength there, and it's, you know, possible to lose, you know, with it. So I think it's a choice you can make about their D, but it's been a part of the story in these losses to the Chiefs. I always have it like it's at least one page away right here in this notebook where I'm already working backwards here. I've filled it, but Mahomes in those three games in the playoffs against the Bills. There it is. 29 for 38, 325 and 3, 33 for 44, 378 and 3. Last year, 17 for 23, 215 and 2. Eight interceptions. Don't I wish. Eight touchdowns, no interceptions. About 300 yards a game or more. 26 incomplete passes in 3 years, in three meetings.
Right. But even with that, in that game last year, you're a missed field goal away from tying it late. So it's to me, is it hurting you? Could it be better? I mean, absolutely. Like, listen to those numbers. Of course, you'd want to be better there. But one of those games is 13 seconds, which they had won and blew it. Right, and that's the point about the offense. Like, if the offense is performing, I mean, not necessarily at that level, but I mean, that'd be nice. They've scored 40 here three times in the last 5 weeks. Like, they look more like that team than they have, I think, almost since the 21 season started, or 22 season, I guess I should say. So that to me is the great equalizer. You know, like, a great offense is going to eat. They're going to get theirs. The Bills are not shutting anybody down. But provided my other side of the ball, the offense, you know, gets their 30 points, I think I can hang with anybody.
Gabe Davis, the four touchdowns in that game, seems more interesting by the year, you know, to look back on. Didn't you feel that Davis was just like coming out party kind of stuff, that he's actually great, not just a good compliment in this offense, but who could put up that game and not just blast off?
Be a launching pad for your entire career, right?
And just so didn't. I mean, the next year was a big disappointment. He was hurt, but still, and then he goes to Jacksonville, and that busted too. So I don't know. I wonder if that becomes like an amazing trivia question someday. The game is so famous,
right?
But it's not Diggs, it's Davis, who puts up like an all-time record performance. The Bills have that, and then they have Molds from the 98 playoff, where it's two of the very best wide receiver performances in NFL playoff history.
Losing efforts, right.
And they lost both. Keith is next. Hi, Keith.
Good afternoon, guys. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Keith.
I think I can still say that, right?
Second of January, it's totally fine.
Fine. You cruise through the weekend with this, but don't hit me up on Monday with it.
Great. All right. Understood. Well, I just wanted to offer something I've been talking to friends about, and it's just this idea that we've been talking a lot about: is the defense good enough for the playoff run? And really, my conclusion is it's never been good during the playoff run, as you guys just discussed. And the whole approach has been, don't get beat deep, make them earn it. And this year there's been times where all that has led to is Josh Allen having the ball less. So my question is it time to really abandon that philosophy and say, hey, we're going to play tight. We got three good corners. We're going to play tight. They beat us. The worst thing that happens is Josh Allen gets the ball back, and we turn this into a Lions or Rams game. But it just seems the worst possible scenario in the playoffs is Josh Allen losing the time of possession battle.
Sitting on the sideline, watching the game go by, exactly. Pondering his fate. Yeah.
We got Benford. We got these guys that are playing at ultra levels, but all I see on TV is, and when I'm at games, is us playing 10 yards off receivers because we don't want to get beat deep, and we have the worst third down defense in the league. So at the very least, let them beat you deep if they do. Maybe you get more sacks, maybe you get more interceptions, but at the very least, Josh Allen gets the ball back.
All right, well, it's logical. The word is aggressiveness, right? That's what you want to see. You want to see them take more chances. I guess I'd be surprised if they did it, because I think they feel like they know what they're doing on defense, but
I feel like a wolf just put on sheep's clothing and walked through the door and said, I think the Bills should replace Sean McDermott. Like what are you trying to do here? He didn't say that, I know, but if you want to change their philosophy on defense, you want to change the coach.
Well, okay.
That's what we're talking about.
But that's obviously not.
Right, exactly.
The caller wants him, McDermott, to change it up, because in the playoffs they have gotten beat. And I don't know. I feel like it's maybe fair. If it doesn't happen, then you can have the conversation about whether it's the guy or something.
Yeah. I might be a little itchy on the trigger finger here. What day is it? I just don't think there's any way in hell that that happens. You want Sean McDermott to change who he is. They've won 5 division titles in a row. They win playoff games every year. It's just not happening. It'd be stunning to me if they came out and played the Chiefs in man defense in the AFC title game or something. Like, it just would blow my mind.
Wade would do it.
I'm not saying it's a horrible idea, even. It's just not realistic at all, I don't think. And I think it does sort of... it's a smack at McDermott to say, like, they've never been any good. I mean, they've won games every year in the playoffs. So, I don't know. I'm a little defensive about
well,
it, I guess.
Well, the next caller is going to tell you who the quarterbacks were.
Right.
Of those games. Yeah, I don't know. Like, we're very much generalizing this point. But could the Bills maybe be more aggressive in these games? It's a different look. The Chiefs are so familiar with them as it is. There might be an element of surprise there, or the Ravens. Just two very different challenges. Kansas City and Baltimore, though, too. So it really has to just be sort of a more generalized thing. But I like the vibe, you know? Let this thing come down to Allen somehow. And, you know, maybe it will, but I don't know. They're probably not going to go all out, create zero blitz, no huddle, trying to get into 48-42 playoff games.
Yeah, I'm 100% against this idea.
Okay.
Yeah. The more I'm sitting here with it, I'm back to where I was with the wolf and the sheep and the Fire McDermott thing. Because I wouldn't be for it. It's an interesting idea, but I hate when teams change entirely who they are. And McDermott's entire career is based on playing this way. And yes, it would be epic if he changed dramatically in some way for a specific matchup, and might even be a good idea. But you're where you are doing what you do this way. I think to change it at this point would send a tough message to the team.